New Year, same extra value meals at McDonald's. So now get two snack wraps plus fries and a medium soft drink for just $8.
For limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California and for delivery.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
We're going to cause trouble. Scott Ferrell is calling the shots from the sideline. We're going to make fun of people. We're going to hurt people's feelings. It's Ferrell on the bench. I believe in whipped cream with everything. Well, on the bench in the biggest way possible, hanging out, a bad seat, a broken ain't a bad apple with a bad attitude, hanging around a bunch of bad attitude, bad tape, bad law, bad dude, bad breath, bad attitude, bad vibes. We are live in the Magic City Studios in the Ferrell Appalachian, right across the river through the woods from where Granny set a fire in the kitchen today because she was smoking some of that Germany Kush Hunter in New York City. The Big Apple. Ooh. People dress in plastic bags, the ready to drive bags, some kind of fashion, shake it up, should do, but all my friends that come around, fight to foot the party, up rats on the west side, bed bugs uptown, what a mess, the times are tattered, my brain splattered all over Manhattan, should do, be shake it up. Hey, what's gangin'? I'm Ferrell, Mafia's running it. You heard the deal, Saints all over the Jags, just stopped them on a fourth down, they turn it over, and now New Orleans has the ball, just under 9 minutes to go in the third. It was all Saints in the first half. You got a couple of big TDs. Winston, 43 yards to Marquez Callaway. And then he did it again. This time a 29-yarder to Callaway. 14-zip. And then a Lambeau field goal from 34 out made it 14-3. And then an Aldrick Rosas field goal from 52 yards out, made it 17-3. Saints, just under nine, like I said, left in the third. So they were laying four. New Orleans are playing on Bourbon Street. And we'll keep our eyes on that one the rest of the way. More importantly, the biggest game in baseball tonight is the Yankees and Braves. They both won nine in a row. Going into this one, it hadn't happened since 1901. The two teams that have won nine in a row hook up. They played in Atlanta, and it's been all Yankees all night. 5-1 into the ninth inning they go. And this game was about Stanton's homer to right to start it up in the second, one zip. Then Swanson homered for Atlanta in the bottom of the second. It was 1-1. Stanton doubles to left, and two runs scored, Gallo and LeMahieu. That made it 3-1. And then Sanchez, Gary Sanchez, a single to left. Gallo and Judge score. That made it 5-1. That was in the eighth inning. And now in the ninth, the Yankees are up and one down, four-run lead in Hot Town against the Braves. So the Yankees looking to make it 10 in a row. Chapman looks like he'll try to close the door. His last few outings have been disastrous. He hasn't been able to get the job done. And, of course, he was coming off the IL. In his first start after the IL, he got lit up, couldn't finish the game. We'll see if he can do it tonight. Somehow the Pirates have tied up the D-backs with a big seventh inning. They were down 5-1, but Reynolds grounds out to short. Gamble scored, made it 5-2. Then they got a home run, made it 5-3. Then a Reynolds triple to deep center field. Hayes scored, it was 5-4. And then Reynolds scores on an error, making it 5-5. So a big three-run seventh inning for the Pirates gets them back in the game. They scored runs in the fourth and fifth. So 5-5 now with Zona at PNC. Top of the eighth, nobody out. Arizona's up. We welcome our radio affiliates, SiriusXM, Mightier 1090, and San Diego Sports Map, Sports Byline, Armed Forces Radio. It's Pharrell on a bench on a misery Monday. Mafia's with me tonight. Rockies 4-1 on the Cubs in the seventh at Wrigley. Royals lead the Astros, bottom six. The Astros have two on and nobody out, trying to get it going here in the sixth. Down a run to the Royals. And already today in the afternoon, the Red Sox on a Travis Shaw walk-off grand slam beat the Rangers 8-4 in 11 innings. Boston gets it done. And tonight, the Blue Jays beat the White Sox 2-1 in Toronto. That was another big game tonight. And the White Sox led it in the sixth, 1-0 on a Vaughn single that Moncada scored on, and then Guerrero ties it up, an RBI with Bichette scoring in the bottom of the sixth. And then in the eighth, Valero scores on a Kimbrel wild pitch, and that was the difference. 2-1 Toronto, they get it done. Interestingly enough, this story in baseball today that's kind of unfurled is insane. The story about the fentanyl that killed Tyler Skaggs was delivered to Angel Stadium on the day that he died, according to the government. And the story just gets better and better as we go. The feds allege that ex-Angel employee Eric Kay was running a drug operation within the Angels organization and using Tyler Skaggs as a middleman. Kay allegedly distributed opioids to at least six Angels players, according to court documents. I mean, does it get any better than this? We'll talk about it when we come back on the bench.
There's listening to Sports Grid, then there's listening to Sports Grid. You know you're doing it right when friends ask you about the week's matchups, the wife is happy, and your teenager regards you with quiet awe.
Here's your slippers, Dad.
Keep listening
to the Sports Grid Radio Network.
All right, Pharrell on a bench. According to this story from League of Justice, they say that the government has evidence that are going to show that a drug dealer delivered the counterfeit pills that killed Tyler Skaggs to an employee at Angel Stadium the same day as Skaggs' fatal overdose. The evidence is not being publicly disclosed, is being held back for trial, allegedly. It also alleges that former Angels communications director Eric Kay allegedly obtained fake oxycodone pills from one of his drug suppliers at Angel Stadium on June 30th, 2019, just before Kay left with Skaggs and the team for a Texas road trip. Later that night, allegedly Kay brought the pills to Skaggs' hotel room around midnight, allegedly, and according to text messages obtained by prosecutors, Skaggs never made it to the game the next day. The pitcher was found dead in his room at the Hilton in South Lake the next morning, just before the start of a four-game series against the Rangers. Autopsy reports show that Skaggs choked on his vomit and had a toxic mix of alcohol and the painkillers, fentanyl and oxycodone, in his system. Prosecutors say medical reports will determine that if not for the fentanyl, Skaggs would be alive, blaming his death on the synthetic opioid known for its ability to be fatal in small doses or when combined with substances like alcohol. It says here, quote, Kay provided Tyler Skaggs with counterfeit oxycodone pills. Skaggs ingested the pills provided by Kay in a short manner, passed away from the effects of fentanyl found in the counterfeit pills, end quote. According to prosecutors, it's unclear if Kay knew the pills were laced with fentanyl. Text messages with his alleged drug supplier on the online marketplace show him repeatedly asking if the drugs contain fentanyl, calling it scary and trying to avoid it, according to documents obtained by the government. However, prosecutors say these texts illustrate that Kay knew it was a grave risk. The pills could contain fentanyl and should be held responsible for Skaggs' death because he supplied the deadly drug. Wow. The evidence that traces the fentanyl-laced pills to Angel Stadium is one piece of a larger case against Kay by the feds. Court documents place tremendous emphasis on Kay's relationship with the team and use of the workplace to operate his alleged drug distribution network. Several text exchanges with the alleged drug dealers indicate Kay had the drugs delivered to Angel Stadium on more than one occasion, according to prosecutors, allegedly. In one such exchange, allegedly, Kay offers to leave the tickets to an Angels game for a dealer if he'll bring the drugs to the stadium, saying, quote, I just can't leave work tonight, end quote. Speaking with another alleged drug dealer, Kay says, quote, you have a son? Could hook him up with a signed trout ball for a trade if you want, end quote. The alleged dealer replies, quote, we Dodger fans, my boy, lots of laughs, end quote. The government also found emails on Kay's work account alleging they are between Kay and his drug suppliers. Court documents claim that Kay would use his work time, work location, when he was in proximity to the players to obtain controlled substances. He'd communicate with individuals during the workday and even ask them to deliver the pills to Angel Stadium. The government says Kay planned and intended to obtain the pills while at Angel Stadium, calling it part of his modus operandi or pattern of criminal behavior. In 2019, during the execution of a search warrant on Kay's office at Angel Stadium, feds found personal items such as razor blade, small cylinder that later tested positive for oxycodone and traces of fentanyl. Prosecutors say it demonstrates that Kay was obtaining and storing pills with him at Angel Stadium, saying, quote, the evidence that Kay had drug residue in his desk drawer is relevant to showing Kay's knowledge and intent of obtaining pills at work, end quote. Wow, this stuff is just absolutely crazy, right? The government's case extends to a larger theory that Kay was running a drug distribution operation within the Angels organization, allegedly contacting at least 9 different drug suppliers to try to obtain pills for various Angels players, often using Skaggs as a middleman, allegedly, according to government documents. The government accuses Kay of distributing oxycodone to several Angels players beginning in early 2017 and promises that at least 5 Major League Baseball players will take the stand and testify against Kay. A civil attorney representing the Skaggs family said in court documents that Kay allegedly may have been providing illegal opioids to at least 6 Angels players. The government says text messages will prove that Kay often used conversations with Skaggs to allegedly coordinate the distribution of oxycodone to other players. Prosecutors claim some of the players received 2 to 3 pills, while others would ask for up to 20, calling Kay the, quote, singular source to players within the organization for oxycodone pills, end quote. Kay reportedly told the DEA that at least 2 executives in the Angels organization allegedly knew he was dealing drugs to Angel players. Attorney Rusty Harden, who also represents Deshaun Watson, is representing the Skaggs family in the wrongful death suit against the Angels. Harden claims the Angels promoted a, quote, alleged drug addict to an executive position with unlimited access to the Angels players. Court papers allege that back in 2019, Kay's own family members reportedly informed Kay's boss that Kay was providing drugs to players within the organization and begged him to intervene, but the boss failed to take action. The boss's attorney denies this, telling sources, quote, before Skaggs' tragic death, this boss was not aware, informed, or had any knowledge whatsoever that Tyler may have used opioids or that Eric Kay or any Angel employee had ever provided opioids to any player. Any statement to the contrary is reckless and false, allegedly. Harden also claims the Angels' traveling secretary was told about Skaggs' drug use long before his death, citing a Los Angeles Times investigation. K began abusing illegal drugs just 2 years after joining the team and went to rehab multiple times over nearly a 24-year period, Harden claims, the lawyer. In 2019, K allegedly missed work due to an overdose and was hospitalized. Harden says executives within the organization knew K was in rehab and had a long-standing problem. The question becomes, are the Angels legally responsible? Legally speaking, it says here, quote, tens of millions of dollars could be hanging in the balance if the organization is found civilly responsible for Skaggs' death in full or in part. The evidence uncovered as part of the government's case could assist the family's civil case against the Angels. For example, Kay allegedly obtained pills through drug deals at Angel Stadium, distributed them to players on team trips, stored and used drugs at work, offered team tickets in exchange for drop-offs, and communicated with drug dealers using his company email address. Employers can be held responsible for the acts of an employee if the employee is acting within the scope of his or her employment when committing the wrongful act. Harden claims the Angels could also reasonably foresee what was going to happen, given the team's alleged knowledge of K's drug use and distribution to players. The Skaggs lawsuit says it's no coincidence that the Angels allowed K to be in the clubhouse, inferring that K's alleged purchase of painkillers for the players was incidental to his employment, allegedly. They called the Angels clubhouse a toxic environment that pressured players to play through pain. Players who missed games due to injuries were called P's. No, you know what that is. And they were ridiculed, allegedly. Tyler quickly realized that he was expecting to pitch even when he was hurt, according to the civil complaint. He had a ton of injuries, including Tommy John, had pain, discomfort through 17 and 18 seasons, according to the family. The family says the Angels were aware of the rigors of the schedule and are aware that players are at risk of turning to medication to assist with pain management. The Angels had a duty to provide a safe work environment for Tyler Skaggs, a duty to properly hire, train, and supervise employees. Blah, 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 blah. They are suing the hell out of the Angels. They got a massive problem on their hands here. And this guy, I mean, unless I'm crazy, this guy, K, is doomed. He's doomed. He's going to jail for a long time, whether he's got a drug problem or not. They got their ass beat. They were going through the motions. They were lifeless.
I don't like that or condone that at all.
I play it straight up, yo.
Bob Nightingale Jr. joins us from the Cincinnati Inquirer. Of course, the Reds are quite a story these days, catching the Padres, getting into the second wild card with an incredible run, and the Padres, frankly, meltdown. It's sure been fun to watch from both ends of it, to see the Reds go for it and to see the Padres' problems. They fired their pitching coach, Rothschild, today. I don't really follow that thinking in terms of what's it his fault that none of the pitchers can get the job done, or you know, the fact that their own GM goes out and gets Jake Arrieta and his first start was the same guy that we saw with the Cubs all season, a disaster. So everything that's happening to the Padres certainly isn't the Reds' problem. They're probably loving life. Bob, good to have you back on the show. What have you thought of this whole development of how they've caught him, and how, in your mind, did they get it done?
Yeah, I mean, it's been pretty remarkable over the past month and a half or so. I mean, the Reds finished their season series against the Padres in early July. And by the end of it, I mean, they only won one game, one of their seven games against the Padres. And I think they were eight games out at that time, or seven and a half. For that last wild card. So it's been remarkable, I mean, what they've been able to catch up on in the past couple months. Obviously, they got hot. The Padres didn't. I think it all starts with Joey Votto. I mean, he's kind of had a renaissance here since he came back from a broken thumb in June. He's been one of the best hitters in the National League. And, you know, looks like a guy in his prime and not a guy who's about to turn 38 in a couple weeks.
Yeah, that's for sure. What did you think when he got the 2,000th hit?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those, like, he's starting to hit a ton of milestones. He got his 300th homer this year, 1,000th RBI, and then, like you said, 2,000th hit. I mean, it's one of those, he's been around so long, it's almost like he almost expected him to do it a long time ago. But, you know, he's just a guy who gets on base so much. You know, the walks he draws, that's been such a big part of his game. And now it's kind of, he's flipped it a little bit where now he's hitting a lot more homers, trying to do a lot more damage at the plate, maybe a fewer walks, more RBIs. And, you know, it's kind of cool to see kind of how he can dominate it in both ways. He can dominate just getting on base, drawing walks, that style of play. And now he's kind of showing he can do it the other way too, where he can just be a power hitter in the middle of the lineup.
How about this series that they just had with the Marlins at Great American? I mean, you talk about kicking ass and taking names. They won all four games, and 6-1, 5-3, 7-4, 3-1. What did you think as you sat there from Thursday through yesterday and saw them just take apart the Marlins?
Yeah, well, I think it started the series before. They lost 2-3 against the Cubs, and the Cubs, after the trade deadline, they don't look anything like they used to. You know, they came into that series, I think, on an 11-game losing streak, and then they took 2 out of 3 from the Reds. So I think that was kind of like a little bit of a wake-up call for them, just saying, okay, we can't sleepwalk our way past bad teams. We're going to have to dial it in here. And that's what they did. I mean, it starts with their starting pitching. Sonny Gray was incredible. Their rookie, Vladimir Gutierrez, was incredible on Sunday. So they got some great pitching performances. They got some hits. But I think it stems from the Cubs. I mean, losing 2 out of 3, that hurt them. And then I think just knowing the finish line where it is, I mean, how tight it's probably going to be against the Padres. They can't afford to lose series to bad teams. So I think that was a wake-up call, and it was one of those, okay, now it's time to take care of business. And like you said, that's what they did.
You know, I think that I remember when they lost the 2 games to the Cubs, and I was on TV, and I said, if they lose this race by a game or two, those are going to be the 2 games that they, you know, kick themselves for, because the Cubs going into that series had lost, like, you know, whatever it was, 12 in a row. And they looked like a single A team after they sold the entire franchise and started losing every game. They looked like an A ball team in the Florida State League. And it was every night they were getting their ass beat. And then all of a sudden they beat the hot Reds. I couldn't believe they lost those 2 games. What was the reaction in the clubhouse to losing those 2 games? Was it like problematic to them, or did they just not care? It was just another game.
Oh no. I mean, I think they were definitely disappointed. I mean, the starting pitcher, Tyler Malley, after they lost their last one of the Cubs, said, hey, we should have won that series. We kind of just, you know, I think they were confident the offense was going to turn it around. They scored 2 runs over the last 2 games against the Cubs. And their offense has been what's carried them for most of the year. So I think it was one of those, they knew they were going to bounce back. They kind of forgave themselves for losing the first one to the Cubs because Kyle Hendricks is pitching. And, you know, and Kyle Hendricks is pitching well. He's one of the better pitchers in the National League. But then losing that last one, I think that one stung on the inside. And I think it also helped. You know, today was an off day after the Marlins series. So it was like, okay, let's just, you know, put pedal to the metal for 4 games, do what we can. They ended up with a sweep. And, you know, I definitely think there was some disappointment, though, from that Cup series.
So Malley goes tomorrow in Milwaukee against Burns. What a pitching matchup that is. These are two of the best pitchers in the National League and all baseball at this point.
Yeah, I mean, Burns definitely has to be a top candidate for Cy Young in the National League with DeGrom injured and Zach Wheeler having some struggles in his last few outings. So he's been incredible. And then Tyler Malley, it's weird because at home, he's really struggled. Like, his ERA is like above 6 at home. But when he's on the road, he's just a different guy. I mean, I think he's like a 1.8 ERA on the road this season. He says it's coincidence. He doesn't think there's anything to it. But it's just one of those things when he's pitching on the road, he's been as good as anybody. And he's beat, you know, Max Scherzer on the road and Zach Wheeler on the road. He's beat some big names and outdueled them and beat some big matchups. So that'll be something for him, is, you know, trying to take down Burns, another top big name.
Wow. I mean, what a huge series this is. I mean, Castillo and Woodruff in the second game, and then in the third game, Miley's going for the Reds. No one yet. Am I crazy? I'm not sure. What am I? I'm missing something here. That third game. It's Gray and Anderson in the third game, correct?
Yeah, correct.
So let me ask you this question. Going into this series, this team, they obviously have the Padres still breathing down their necks. Although they passed them, I kind of equate it to a car race. I said on the air today, they remind me of a NASCAR and IndyCar race when once the team, you know, once the chase has been going on for 50 or 60 laps and you finally pass the car that is in the lead, it's over. You know, 9 out of 10 times the guy that passes the leader finally goes on and wins the race. You see it all the time. Do you feel that the Reds are like that, that they've passed them and now they're going to finish the deal? Or are you still worried about the Padres, even though you've seen how bad they've played over the last few weeks?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Padres, they've struggled, but they're also a team that I think they play 3 games against the Dodgers coming up too, starting tomorrow. You know, they're a team that when they're hot, they're really hot. And I mean, they can beat anyone. So I wouldn't count them out. But I would say the biggest thing that's working in the Reds' favor is their schedule. I mean, they still have another series against the Cubs. They still have the Tigers, the Nationals. I think 6 or 9 games left against the Pirates. So, you know, the schedule looks a lot better in their favor compared to the Padres. You still have 19 games against the Dodgers and Giants to finish out the season. So, I mean, the Padres are going to have their hands full trying to get through that. They definitely have the talent to do it as long as their pitching holds up. But I think the Reds are definitely in the driver's seat in terms of just the soft schedule. Milwaukee might be too far for them to catch in the division, but it should be soft enough schedule where they should have the upper hand in the wild card race, at least on paper.
Yeah, because I got to tell you, I think the more I look at their schedule in September all the way to the end in those first 3 games in October, I mean, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, the Pirates are awful, and, you know, so are the Cubs, even though they beat you in those two, and the Nationals sold the farm too. I mean, obviously some tough games in Chicago against the White Sox, and I guess the Cardinals, I'm not afraid of the Cardinals if I'm the Reds, although they're playing them in St. Louis, as if that matters. But you're right, that schedule favors them. I mean, I think they play a bunch of bunk teams. They should win those games. I know it's easier said than done, but let's face facts. The Pirates and Cubs suck, and sort of the Nationals these days.
Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely, like your analogy, I mean, it puts them in the driver's seat. I mean, I think that as long as you take care of business against bad teams, you control your own destiny at this point with a 1-game lead in the wild card. You know, it's going to be up on the Padres to try and win a lot of games against the Dodgers and Giants, and if they do that, you know, they're in a decent position, but, I mean, that's a lot more uphill than trying to take care of business against the Pirates.
So, can you hang out for a couple minutes? I wouldn't mind asking you about a few more players and pitchers if you have the time. If not, I understand.
No, yeah, of course.
All right, cool. We're talking to Bob Nightingale Jr. with the Cincinnati Inquirer. When we come back, I want to go through some of these others. I had mentioned Miley. He's going to go in that first game in Miami. And I want to ask him if, you know, Mally or Miley, they both have 10 wins, which guy he likes better the way they're pitching heading down the stretch.
Every day, sports happens.
It never stops.
And neither do we. Get the expert perspectives you need, strategies and vital information you won't get anywhere else. You're listening to the home of the Winning Edge. This is the Sports Grid Radio Network.
All right, we're talking to Bob Nightingale Jr., the Cincy Inquirer. Great paper, great writer. It's good to have him on the bench again. A lot of people, and I don't want to offend Bob Jr., but his dad's been on my show forever, and we're good friends, and I'm just so happy for Jr. that he's doing so great in his career. We've talked about it before. I'm stoked for him. And so let me ask you about Miley. I had mentioned he's going Friday against the Marlins. You go to Miami after you kick their ass in Great American over the weekend, this past weekend, Thursday through Sunday. And then he'll go against them on Friday. So he has the same type of wins as Mally, lower ERA. They've both been great. Which one's been better, in your opinion, or are they on the same plane?
I think Wade Miley's been a little bit better. He's just been more consistent. He's consistently pitched deep into games, giving them 6-7 innings. His last start was probably one of the few times he hasn't done that. But he's been a huge lift for a team that has the bullpen struggles that they do, having, you know, the questionable relievers at times. He's been kind of the rock the entire year. I mean, they've had a lot of guys in their starting rotation have had their struggles. You know, Luis Castillo got off to a terrible start. Tyler Mahle's had some ups and downs here and there. Sonny Gray hasn't been as good as he usually is. But Wade Miley's been there the whole year. And, I mean, without him, the Reds definitely wouldn't be in this position. So I would go with him. I mean, I think he's been rock solid since the start of the season.
So I have to ask you about Gray, where he stands now, you know, in terms of his, you know, the amount of games that he's pitched and what his record is, his ERA, everything else. Are they getting frustrated with him, like end of the road type frustration for him?
No, I don't think they're at that point. I just think it's one of those, you know, he's getting older. He's above 30. Always been kind of a spin type pitcher, breaking ball, slider. You know, that's always been a huge part of his game. And I think, you know, one, with his age, he's got hurt a little bit more often. Two, you also have to look at the, you know, cracking down on the sticky stuff. I mean, that affects basically any pitcher. You know, 90% of pitchers in the league. And so for a guy who bases his whole career off spin, I think that had a big effect in terms of he has to reinvent himself a little bit. And he started to do that. His last start, he threw 7 shutout innings, gave up 1 hit, you know, developed a new type slider, 1 slider for strikes, 1 slider to get guys to chase, and it ended up working really well for him. So it's just one of those, I think it's been a year of trying to figure out what works and what doesn't for him, and that's led to some up and down results. But as long as he figures it out, you know, in the next 5 weeks, I think the Reds are still comfortable with him being a top of the rotation type guy for them.
Is their bullpen good enough to handle the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, that's the big question. It's been a lot better since the trade deadline. Michael Lorenzen came back from an injury, 2 injuries. He came back from a shoulder strain and a severe hamstring strain, and he's been incredible. I don't think he's given up an earned run yet this year. So he's been a huge lift in terms of 8th inning, 9th inning type guys. Michael Givens, they traded for him from Colorado, another guy who's been lights out since he came over. And then they get TJ Antone back. He was their best reliever for the first half of the season. He got shut down for a forearm strain. He'll be back probably tomorrow, activated for the first game in Milwaukee. And so it'll be interesting to see how quickly he can kind of regain what he did before he got hurt. But when he's on, he's as good as any reliever, I think, in the division outside of Devin Williams and Josh Hader.
I can't believe I've talked to you about this before, and this is, you know, the last time we were on the show, of where they were, you know, Castellanos and Winker, and what they had done to make the All-Star team and everything else. Are you surprised at all at the fact that they've carried it on ever since then? Because I have to tell you, it is amazing to me the numbers that they put up, that they're both still, you know, and obviously Castellanos way over 300 and Winker's 307. Look, I know it may not matter to some people, but to me it does, because the league is rife with players that can't hit 210. I mean, I've never seen it so bad, and I don't want to hear about anything sticky stuff and all this other nonsense. The bottom line is, there's the haves and the have-nots, and there are way more have-nots than there are haves in Major League Baseball. Guys just can't hit anymore for average, and to see what those two guys have done is, and Votto, is blowing my mind. But I'm used to Votto.
Yeah, and Jesse Winker's always kind of been like a not almost like a mini Votto in a way. He gets on base a ton. And it was always one of those things is like if he ever starts hitting for power, he's going to be an all-star type guy, a guy who can, you know, you can base your lineup around. And that's finally happened this year before he went on the injured list. I mean, he led the league in doubles, led the league in total bases, hit over 20 homers. So he's been a guy that not surprised. It's just one of those I think he finally developed into his power, finally started figuring out his swing, and then he just dominated from there on out. I mean, he was their best hitter last year. And then he's just proven it for a longer stretch this year. I mean, last year was such a short season. Now he finally proved it over a full season. And then Nick Castellanos, I mean, he's always been known for his bat, not really known as a defender, but the way he's hitting, I mean, he's been incredible in terms of, like you said, hitting above 300. At one point, he was hitting 330 before he injured his wrist and came back. Took some time for him to get his timing back, but another guy, I'm not shocked that he's having a great season because he always hit the ball hard. But to do it this consistently and hitting above 300 and at a time when not many people do that anymore, it's huge for just the Reds having those two consistent hitters at the top of their lineup.
So let me ask you lastly about how they fare against the Dodgers or how they fare on the West Coast. Because if it ended today, they'd play them. And if the Dodgers don't catch the Giants 2.5 deep and they get that wild card, there's not many people that think the Reds are going to beat the Dodgers in a one-gamer.
Yeah, I mean, that'll be their big challenge. I mean, the Dodgers, they have so many guys they can throw out there, Walker Buehler, Max Scherzer, Kershaw, any of those guys. But, you know, the Reds won a series against the Dodgers earlier this year. So, I mean, I think they have the confidence. It's just in terms of, one, can their bullpen hold up in a playoff-type setting where, you know, every inning is going to be a high-leverage type situation from the fifth inning on. Can they survive something like that with the bullpen guys they have? And, two, can they hit in the postseason? They didn't score a run in the two games they played against the Atlanta Braves in the playoffs last year. They left a sour taste in their mouth, but, I mean, that's something they kind of have to get over is, can their regular season offense carry over to the postseason?
One game, anything can happen. I mean, stranger things have happened that, you know, a team comes out, next thing you know, you put three runs on the board or four runs on the board early and catch them sleeping. And then if they're not hitting, you can win the game. I guess that's the way you got to do it, right?
Yeah, and I think if the Dodgers are in the wild card game, I think, you know, whether it's the Reds or the Padres or anyone else who is in that second wild card, I mean, I think you'd always look at it as I'd rather face the Dodgers in a one-game series than a seven-game series, just knowing the depth they have, the pitchers they have. I'd definitely take your odds in a one game.
Yeah, no doubt. It'll be interesting to see how they do now that they have the lead and we're running out of games and running out of weeks, and I think it's going to get better and better as we go. We'll check back in with you, Bob. Great having you on the bench tonight to talk about the Reds. We'll catch up soon. Thanks a lot, brother.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Thanks for having me.
My man, Bob Nightingale Jr. with the Cincinnati Inquirer with us. So, I look forward to seeing how they do down the stretch. Certainly an interesting chase right now with the fact that they caught, the Padres, passed them. Now they have a game lead for the second wild card. How about being 9.5 games behind the Dodgers for the first one? So that's a done deal. That's not happening. So they just need to get the second wild card. That's their only goal, because I know a lot of people would think, you know, that they're going to catch Milwaukee. They're not, in my view, catching Milwaukee 7.5 deep of them in the Central. And I certainly think that Milwaukee gets very few, people, even nationally, that respect them enough to give them any juice to do anything in the playoffs. I just don't think people give them respect. I think that's a mistake. I think that they're a very good team with very tough pitching. They got hitters. Yelich is healthy again and hitting grand slams and everything else. So the bottom line is that the Brewers are very dangerous. The Reds are not catching the Brewers, but You know, right now it would be the Reds against the Dodgers in a wild card playoff game at Chavez Ravine in L.A. That's it. Bottom line. So they have their work cut out for them just to get it, just to get the second wild card. And they got their work cut out for them if they get it, in that they're going to play the Dodgers, who are just nasty. Now, a lot of people think that they're going to, you know, catch the Giants, and they've been unable to do that up until this point. The Giants still have a 2.5 game lead. It's fluctuated, you know, between 2 and 4 games. And it was 4 like a week ago. Now it's down to 2.5. But the Giants ended up winning that Bay Bridge series, taking it 2 of 3, getting it done. It is what it is. They continue to impress in that they don't lose series. They win. They keep winning. They've gone belly to belly in terms of this division, which no one thought would happen. No one thought that even when they had the lead that it would last. No one thought that in April, May, June, July, August. And here we are in, you know, the latter stages of August. And people are still trying to talk like they're not going to get it done, or that they're not for real. That is insanity. It's absolute insanity. I even heard today, we were talking about the Giants on Coast to Coast, and people, you know, question their pitching. And I find that also hilarious, because the bottom line is that most people don't realize that, you know, they talk about whatever, Johnny Cueto, and, you know, then nobody knows who else is pitching. They don't know how great Gausman's been. Or Dee Sclafani, who got injured the other day, or, you know, Alex Wood, the former Dodger. But the guy that never gets any juice is Logan Webb, who's been a freak for the Pharrell. The guy has been unbelievable pitching for the Giants, and they never talk about their pitching. They never talk about any of their hitters. All they talk about in, you know, really the national baseball scene is the Dodgers. I mean, they spend all day, every day talking about the Dodgers because obviously they won the World Series. Obviously they're the, you know, cat's ass in terms of depth and juice. And, you know, I guess Los Angeles, the city, just the fact they've won all these titles lately, Lakers, Dodgers, etc. All I know is it's like the Giants don't even exist. You'd think San Francisco wasn't even on the map, like it fell into the Pacific Ocean in an earthquake. But the reality is they've kicked everyone's ass all season. Problem with people. Everybody expects every team in the effing league to win the Super Bowl. One team wins. The rest of them lose.
Nothing for you.
How about that? One last indignity.
All right, Pharrell on the bench. So the Saints just kicked, they punted to the Jaguars, and the Jags are going to get the ball at the 50-yard line. And they're down 10 with 4 minutes left, and Gardner Minshew has moved the ball. They've scored. They got back in the game. They were down 23-3, and now all of a sudden he's put up a touchdown and a field goal, and they're down 10. They score again. You got yourself a nice little bad beat crow sandwich to chew on. I mean, you got to be kidding me. You're up 23-3. You got to bag that game and, you know, go out and eat it in your car. I mean, this game should be over. I shouldn't even have to sweat through this nonsense. I have to tell you, watching it, you know, whatever, the second half, it is just so terrible. The NFL preseason is so anemic. It is so awful. It really is. I'm watching draft choices drop, easy passes. I mean, just ugly football at its worst. I don't know what it is about this preseason other than money. They got to make money somehow, You know, they got to fill their coffers. But, like, you can look in the stands in the Superdome. There's nobody there. I mean, it's literally empty. And you could say it's COVID or whatever else. All I know is it's bad football is what it is. It's who would walk around the corner to watch this? I said it today on TV that it's like the dad takes his kid to his first game. That's who goes to these games. The kid that is like, oh, my God, I'll go to a game. I don't care if it's preseason or regular season.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.